Yes, and how you
Love
doing,
Talk my Radio.
This is the Steve Thompson Live Show. And well, today is August 31st, 2016. I am the son, also known as Eric Payne, and you are Kay Thompson. Let's get you moving a little bit closer to the mic, Kay Thompson.
We are. I am close. I think that's okay now. Hi there.
How you doing?
Okay.
Get a little closer. So we can be on the safe side.
Okay. Boy, I'm telling you, this is really something. You know, Donald Trump is in the news. He has, you know, really been all over the news for days and days. I mean, he's one of the most popular people, I think, in the country right now. Probably in the whole, you know, Western Hemisphere, I would imagine. Because, you know, he gets more press than anyone else. And you know what I'm saying? I also think that, you know, because he's getting so much press, he is so popular. You know, he just may be the next president of the United States.
I don't know, but let's go to the hot story that he went to Mexico today. Plus, we want to welcome Wayne Gilman. Wayne, how you doing?
Hey, good evening, everyone. How's everybody?
Everything is fine. How are you?
I guess all right. I can't complain. You know, I'm anxious to find out more about the Donald, what he's up to, trying to change his image. I think it's much too late.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody who can't see through what he did today has to be blind, and I don't think the Mexicans are that naive and ignorant.
He's not strange.
He knows what he's doing. He's grasping at straws now. The only thing that I'm concerned about, I was looking at a recent poll, and it seems like Hillary's numbers are dipping. But we still have several news cycles to go in the debate.
Wait, let me interrupt you real quick. I just want to bring people up to speed in case anybody that's joining us doesn't know what we're talking about. We're talking about today and breaking news today that Donald Trump has decided to go to Mexico, went to Mexico today after all of the stuff that he talked about Mexican people. And today, Wednesday, the 31st of August, just want to make sure everybody knows, start off that that's what happened. So that's what we're all referring to. And also, I came back home to now, I guess he's doing a speech talking about a speech on immigration. But go ahead, Wayne, pick up your thoughts on what you were saying.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I mean, I should have given some backdrop. I thought maybe you had done that. But in all honesty, as I said, just commenting on what I observed, it was just a photo op to say that he was able to get the ear of the Mexican president and that he discussed issues, but the important issues about putting up a fence and trying to see if they could do something about the issue with jobs, you know, NAFTA, all those things were never discussed. So I know in a couple of weeks, probably the Mexican president will extend a similar opportunity to Hillary Clinton, and obviously she'd have more to say. There was just a lot of behind the scenes, very secret, almost borderline conspiratorial work to bring about this news conference today, which is something that he called for. And from what I was able to glean from some of the networks, they didn't even really go through the traditional vetting out of the press and even security that would ordinarily go to any foreign person, dignitary, or anyone in his entourage just to come in for that photo op with the Mexican president. So, again, as I said earlier on at the outset, I think the Mexican people are not naive. I think they see through what they know what when he spoke a year ago this time, you know, it came from his gut. You know, you could feel the craw of his stomach that he really wanted to end and sever ties with Mexico and didn't really come up with a thought process. He said some things that were highly offensive and very, very decadent and disrespectful towards the Mexican people and people of Latino background. And, you know, I just want people to be reminded that there's nothing new with this guy. This is just another act. It's like part of his minstrel show that he goes across the country and figures
yeah.
he'd have an opportunity to look like as if he's a presidential figure with, you know, all the trappings that come along with an international news conference
idea,
like that.
Yeah, the whole concept is ridiculous that this man has been going on for the last 15, 18 months being derogatory, being denigrating Mexican-Americans, Hispanics, and coming with this kind of very aggressive, charging language, you know, let's go get them, the ugly American language. And now to get an invite from the president of Mexico, which is kind of bizarre that he would invite this guy, but also I guess it could make him look presidential. I guess I understand his ratings, his poll numbers are just as bad as Donald Trump in Mexico. But I mean, the whole thing is just—it's just part of this facade, this show that Donald Trump has been doing. All this talk. I mean, I wonder how his supporters feel whenever his whole calling, "Who's going to pay for the wall in Mexico?" And to say today, and to come off with such the bravado and the big bad guy, and then when you see the guy, you don't even discuss it. Tell him, like you've been telling everybody else, that oh yeah, you're going to pay for the wall. I mean, you could call it being presidential, I guess, the optics. But still, I don't know, because you were talking big and bad, or we're going to make them pay for the wall, and that's a call and response moment in almost all of your rallies. And then you get there face to face with the guy, and you got nothing to say.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That almost sounds like somebody who likes to talk a lot of trash, talking big and bad, and as the Godfather of Soul used to say, talking loud and saying nothing. And that's what Donald Trump's been doing all this time. And I wonder, I kind of feel. For if we got any Donald Trump supporters listening to us out there, and we've been watching him on the news all day, spinning what he did, but it is really just, when are they going to get hip to the big trick, to the big three-card money game that you see that, you know, we often see those of us that live in the New York, New Jersey area see these guys, people playing on the street all the time. I mean, it's really, yeah, I wonder how much is their hatred and their racism going to carry them where they're willing to vote for this man, even though that it's disrespectful. You have people that are enthusiastic about your position as Mexico is going to pay for the wall and we're going to do this and this and that. And then you get there and you got nothing to say. And how do these people feel? I feel bad for somebody who's right behind them and say, yeah, Captain General, we're right behind you. They're going to pay. What? You didn't mention it to them when you were there? I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, is this there? Are they that hateful that, well, we're willing to put up with that? I guess so. I guess they're willing to put up with that because it was okay in the beginning, his racist stance and the racist things he would say. So that was acceptable. So I guess this is acceptable too. But these people are beginning, I mean, the Republican Party is looking, and people who are supporting this guy are really looking like embarrassments. I don't know, amongst themselves, I'm sure they, you know, they talk in their own think tank, in their own bubble. But amongst themselves, but when you get show that picture to the rest of the world, you're looking pretty silly following this guy.
I happen to agree with you, Eric. I mean, it's just unfortunate, you know, what has gone on here. And I think most political pundits who are evaluating the state of this contest, even with all the negative publicity associated with Clinton lately, I don't want to give much traction to the case with Wiener and his wife and all that, but you know, it has nothing to do with Hillary's rise as a presidential figure. But the deal is, you know, one wonders, in all honesty, why is there not enough vetting out and what goes on in the course of the people that they hire? I think that foundation that
that has nothing to do with it. I mean, the vetting of the
people. Yeah, I know, exactly.
Who would you bet? You would bet Huma and you would bet her emotions? That's a distraction. That's a deflection.
Yeah, it is. But I mean, the thing is, the press.
I mean,
the press
has no bearing. And for the people to try to make it to have a bearing on Hillary or some sort of reflection because this young woman falls in love with a guy who turns out to be a wacko. We all know he's wacky. But that has no bearing whatsoever on Hillary. It has no bearing on any vetting process or anything. And that side is the only ones who try to turn that into something.
The right wing media is trying to take that for a touchdown, and if that has reflected in recent poll numbers, you know, as I said at the beginning, there's several news cycles to go through before the election, and I would like to think the tide is now finally in the progressive electorate and Democratic favor as far as this presidency is concerned. I think even the most staunch Republicans know that they don't have a horse in this race with Trump. You know, they you can't control him, which is his biggest problem, and it's a liability for the party. And you know, they're going to have to rebuild after this, and I just pray for their sake that this guy goes away. I mean, some of the things that he said in the last week about black people, and even to use that shooting of Dwayne Wade's relative out there in Chicago, I just think that is highly insulting. It just goes to show that in his mind, all blacks, and from his perspective, engage in that scurrilous activity, and we need to change party affiliation to end that, which is crap. I mean, I'm using the word crap, but I would love to say more, and I was offended by it, and I am offended by the subtle tone and the places he goes to perpetuate this myth that there aren't successful people of color who don't engage in that activity, and that, yeah, maybe if there were some programs that stuck on the wall, and I'm not talking about what's happened in the last 8 years. This is going back years. What's happening in Chicago is not something brand new. This is not a new phenomenon, you know? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's all those things that I look at, but the man is insulting, okay?
The man is dangerous, too. And, I'm annoyed still. You know, he really is dangerous. You know, somebody needs to, you know, call him out and, you know, probably put him in a hospital because he's doing more damage than anything else. So, but anyway, he is, it's unreal, you know, to hear that somebody like him would be running for the presidency of the United States of America, the most powerful country, you know, in the world. You know, it's just so unbelievable. It is really frightening to see that Donald Trump is in the position that he is under, that he is in. You know, when he talks about, you know, people, sending people back where? And you're going to go into Mexico and do what? And do a wall and then you deny everything? He says something and then he turns around and lies. But he thinks he can get away with it. And because of the fact that he has a lot of money, you see, and a lot of people just aren't—they're afraid of, you know, really calling him out or saying anything negative to him or about him. He is a scary, scary person.
Yeah, that's the sad part—the fact that his money provides a certain amount of independence and influence.
Well, I wonder if his money—you know—that's a good point. I wonder if his money had something to do with this meeting with the president of Mexico. Maybe he does promise something, or maybe, you know, because it's really bizarre that this guy spends so much time talking about your country, your countrymen, your citizen, and you invite the guy to come down. One of the past presidents of Mexico doesn't understand it. He doesn't understand why this current president invited him. But there must be something unsaid. I mean, he is a billionaire, and I that thought passed my mind. The overall thing that is the thing that tempts everybody in the world is money.
It's money, exactly.
And perhaps there's something going on there, but I felt that standing next to the guy, Donald Trump, looked sheepish. He looked like, I guess that was his look of trying to be humble, but, I mean, it's a laughing stock. And I think that they thrive on, and they count on people not being educated in their party. Because if you just listen to what this guy says and the constant double talk that his surrogates have, and the deflecting in the arguments that they make and picking out points that aren't germane to the particular subject matter they're talking about. They're all over the place. But all he has to say is those racist elements of these people, it's us against them, America is not great anymore, all these things that are cold wars, that are dog whistles to many Americans, those people who think they're Native Americans, and I don't mean the Native American Indians, those people, the Native, I think that's the same people that call themselves Natives, or the Native perspective, where we have Caucasians who have been here for a while, people who settled, you know, that's what they're calling the Nativists. I forget, I'm trying to pronounce the word. But it's the reference that they're having to some people who really want to keep America pure, keep these people from immigrants, various ethnic immigrants from coming into the United States. They have the nerve to call themselves nativists. I think that's just nativists. And so Donald Trump resonates to them. He resonates to those people. And all he had to say were those things. You know, they're coming in our country. Our country's not great anymore. And this and that. And these things are all a result of the public Republican practices within the government for years. And people that have find themselves in the middle class that aren't doing as well as they were, that's not the fault of Democrats. That's the fault of Republican programs that have been put in place, or Republicans refusing to act on the on behalf of the middle class. That's already a fact. But still, they've done such a hypnosis job on a lot of these people that they can't seem to wake up and vote their own interests. I mean, we know the history of Donald Trump. I mean, Mom, you and Wayne, you guys covered it.
Yeah,
the action throughout New York, throughout history, is being sued for discriminatory practices in terms of tenants in his buildings. Is attacked on the Central Park Five and wanted to see them get railroaded, which they were.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is nothing new to us, but the rest of the country, they don't know his history like we do.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I always mentioning, you know, the full-page ad that he took out about the five boys, you know, that was, they were accused of that crime of, you know, raping this woman in the park. And he was the one who, yeah, Central Park, the Central Park Five, and they were kids. And yet he took out, he just, you know, zeroed in on them. They were black kids, you know. And he zeroed in on it. I never will forget that. And they went through absolute hell. And that was such a big story at the time. And still, you know, he comes out looking, or he thinks he looks clean, you know, as the Board of Health. And he doesn't. But then again, he is a billionaire. See, that's what people are buying into. They think that he is so rich that he can do anything. And you know what? It looks like he may be able to do that.
Well, there's no substance to what he's doing. That's the thing. I mean, you could give the appearance of being something that you're not, or at least give the appearance in terms of substance. But if you have nothing to back it up, you know, it's just unfortunate. And I think to a certain extent, I can't say that I've been ferociously reading and scrutinizing and perusing every newspaper that or any publication or reviewed all the networks to see what's been going on and giving an honest analysis about Donald Trump. But Kay, you and I both know, because of his history in New York, I think the press has been somewhat they get a failing grade for not being as scrutinous to go into his history and to bring these issues up even today. I didn't see where there was much of a question and answer period in terms of asking him tough questions, you know. And there were members of the progressive media there. You know, I mean, all we heard is that he didn't discuss the fence. Well, why didn't you? You know, it's, I don't know. I don't get it. You know, I just think that we need a pit bull in the media to go after and bring up these points, and hopefully it'll come out during the debate.
Yeah, but when, you know, one thing, it really, it almost looks as if people are afraid, you know, to attack him about some of the things that he says. They back off, they hesitate, they'll wait, and I think there's fear of what Trump will do. I really do. I know one thing. I think he has the media, you know, all under his thumb. Whatever he says, they go right to him. He has gotten more press than anyone I can ever remember running for any office at all. So how do you figure that? Does he own the various radio stations, the television stations, the full media, or what? Do we have any people of any courage, you know, going to be taking him on?
I understand what you're saying, and I mean, there are times when you will say something, and our good friend Dominic Carter, I'll never forget, he wasn't working with us at the time, but he called Giuliani out about his marriage,
yep.
his various marriages, and New York mm-hmm. One pulled him on the ropes for a couple of not so much suspended him, but basically felt that he went too far in terms of saying certain things. And I've been in meetings where people of influence can influence someone's livelihood based on what they may say, and I'm not saying this to ridicule Dominic. I think he's an excellent reporter. He's got a lot of guts, but there are situations out here in which people have been known to be intimidated by the financial influence of others, and there's certain things that you ask, and then there are things that you don't ask. But at the same time, I'm sorry, Eric. What'd you say?
Welcome to America, right?
Yeah, it is.
There's certain concepts. I mean, we all have to agree that there are certain concepts that go on in the United States that the average American cannot grasp. Like, at the end of the day, corporations run a lot of things. At the end of the day, corporations can have influence a lot of things. Like you said, you get some reporters that are really going after a story, and maybe they might get word from their bosses or the CEO or the executive or the shareholders tell this person to back up off the story because of this, that, and the other. Or somebody knows somebody with influence. I mean, that's unfortunately the way America, the way the world runs. They're powerful, can pull certain strings. It just depends on, I think, that the way the world works depends on which group of the powerful you're talking about, you're aligned with. Is it the group of the powerful that has a moral conscience and that believes in democratic values, or is the group of the powerful that believes in a more of a dictatorship perspective? And I give an example of this type of perspective is when you have people like Warren Buffett, one billionaire, against people like a Donald Trump. Well, he's not really a billionaire. They already know that. Or people like, what's the guy, Edelman, the guy, the Vegas billionaire who backs, Sheldon Edelman, who backs a lot of Republican cause. So it just depends on which billionaire is on your side. And when which one of those people that support the Democrat or Republican. So it's always about power in the end, I would suppose. That's why Hillary's, they said she hasn't been depressed for a minute because she's been fundraising. She's going to her fundraising friends and Trump is going to his. I think the aberration or the situation with Donald Trump is that he's such a guy, an island unto his own, that he probably alienates a lot of his crew, or certainly he's alienated the Republican establishment, and has shown that he has no allegiance to tradition or what is their structure in line. He's just kind of the guy that's going for himself. And the whole problem with that type of society is that we have a populace, the majority of people that aren't that well educated, the majority of the people that can be. Can be swayed, like followers. I mean, it's inherent in human beings, I suppose, a herding mentality, to want to follow a leader. We elect a leader, and then we follow what that leader says and listen to what that leader and do what that leader says do and read what that leader says read. And that's kind of human nature to a certain degree. So, we're in the final analysis, we're only talking about a small group of people, as you know, Wayne, that will control, that will decide this election, and those are the independents, right? Because the Republicans that are extreme Republican that are definitely going to vote for Republican are going to do that. Democrats are definitely going to vote for Democrats. They're going to do that, and the votes that are up for grabs are the ones in between. And it all depends, I suppose, on your perspective about life. I would suppose that when you hear Bernie supporters that saying they're going to vote for Trump, maybe the majority of those are white who have that perspective. I don't think that black Bernie supporters, unless they're all the way Bernie, are going to say they're going to vote for Trump if they can't vote for Bernie. We have a different, you know,
well,
depending on your ethnic group, is a different perspective. You have different things
yeah.
that are at stake. Black people don't have to look
at
my position to have to vote for Donald Trump.
No, I agree with you, Eric. And I think one thing that I'd like to see somebody call out are these black ministers that have suddenly ponied up to Donald Trump. I can't help but feel there must be some sort of monetary connection with their involvement and outspokenness. I'm sorry. I mean, I don't think that they're all that genuine about you know what they're trying to do. And their talking points to have the majority of black people to embrace his candidacy when you stop and look at other things that he says, and these guys cannot account for his behavior in other areas, you know? I mean,
yeah.
I never see them on the even in the conservative media, Fox and places like that, I never see them having to respond to some of the decadent and disrespectful stuff that Trump has come out with, and most recently the Dwayne Wade incident there in Chicago, you know, and
right.
the inference that all black people act like that, and I mean, you never get, you know, them to come on as if there's some sort of pundit to explain away why we act that way if they're representing us as clergy.
Right. I mean, that's a great segue because, you know, the other hot story this week was been this black pastor Mark Burns, who tweeted out that picture of a cartoon of Hillary Clinton in blackface, and that caused a huge big stir. And if you heard if you hear this guy's explanation, which he retracted that and apologized for the tweet, but he doesn't apologize for his feeling and his assertion that, you know, Hillary Clinton is just using black people and the Democratic Party hasn't been doing anything for black people. But the way they go about it, I mean, if we're talking about, well, let's just focus on Pastor Mark Burns, because it was really very ridiculous to put out the animation that he tweeted of Hillary in blackface, first off. And I happened to be watching the interview the other day on Meet the Press Daily with Kristen Welker, who had him on the show immediately after that tweet. I think it was Monday. And
mm-hmm.
he was talking about that. And if you heard any clips from it, you could hear him get quite animated and really start yelling as he's trying to make his point as to why black people should vote for Hillary and Donald Trump and this and that. But and you know, like you said, there is a monetary perspective. With these black preachers, why else? There's 1% of black people that are going to vote for Donald Trump. And you know, people want to be friends with a rich person. You know, if nothing else, for networking opportunities and for business opportunities. So I think that a lot of these black folks that want to vote for Donald Trump or vote Republican and say, you know, it's about the business opportunities and this and that. It's almost like, you know, they're ignoring the intrinsic racism that's already built in the structure of our country, that's inherent in the structure of our country. And I think part of the argument, the reason for that argument is that is the only argument that black people have, people of color have. You know, it's almost like it's presented like our only argument is that we're being discriminated against, and there's racism and this and that, and it's okay, we were slaves at once, and it's okay now, you're not slaves anymore, so why can't you pull yourself up, you know? And it's almost like these people, these Pastor Mark Burns and these other black people, they're validating the feeling that many of these people that happen to want to support Trump, people that might be white that don't believe that black people are still being oppressed, black people like those ones that are supporting Trump are validating their feelings. They're validating those feelings that everything's okay now, so why aren't you better off? Which we know that's not the case, because racism is inherent in every aspect of our society. And that
right.
needs to be dealt with. And act like just because we're not slaves anymore, just because it's against the law to discriminate against people, to act like there's not a residual effect of a country that's been built upon built up based on the notion of oppressing one group is ridiculous. And for these folks to come out there and support this guy who's been so condescending to their people, to people that look like them, you're right. I believe there is a financial component involved in their support of Donald Trump. I mean, this guy was really going off the other day, this Pastor Mark Burns, and he's got the whole pastor showy kind of thing, and he's got the whole theatrical act down. And I just wonder, you know, same thing with black people, and I'll say it's the same thing to those Republicans that are blindly following Donald Trump. You know, think for yourself.
Exactly.
You're following a guy who's telling you to vote for Donald Trump. Come on. You're sitting in his church. You're one of his parishioners. Come on. You really say, is that really your perspective? If that's your perspective, if that's the conclusion that you come through after much deliberation, fine. But, you know, we need to think. And the only point that I agree with Pastor Burns is black people need to make Democrats work as hard for their vote as Republicans.
Exactly.
But the fact of the matter is that the Democrats are stepping up to the plate, you know.
I'm sorry, Kay, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, saving this article, you know, because, you know, really it just describes the use of social media changing the political landscape. As a matter of fact, this professor, you know, one of the colleges here, and his name is Joel Penny, and he studies how social media is changing elections. And he says that for good or bad, social media is changing the political landscape. Today, anyone with a computer or a smartphone can become a pundit, campaigner, or an activist.
Exactly. Right.
While the 2008 presidential election ushered in the use of social media as a new weapon in your arsenal, 8 years later, it has become arguably the most important resource candidates now have to spread the word. Social media draws people into the political process. All right, now he's of the School of Communications and Media. And he says that his expertise goes back to when he was at University of Pennsylvania doctoral candidate to study the critical and social aspects of media and the political dimensions of pop culture.
Yes.
Go figure.
And so to tie that in to Pastor Mark Burns' tweet, that social media, that tool that we know has been out there now, that's been being used quite effectively,
yep,
certainly by someone like Donald Trump, but also came back, the backlash on this guy came back just as fast because there was that social media back whip, mm-hmm, that everybody was able to see this tweet and respond to him so negatively that he was forced to take it down and respond to Trump's campaign very negatively because of that very insulting image that he tweeted out. So I mean, it comes around for that. But you know, back to the fact of the matter is, like you were saying, when there are these people that are supporting blacks and Hispanics, and I wonder, you know, they're supporting Donald Trump, and he's been so derogatory towards your particular ethnic group. There is probably a financial perspective,
mm-hmm,
in there.
Well,
I'll be
honest. While you were you know, pontificating on what was going on there, I happened to go on the internet here and I looked up through Wikipedia Burns' background, and what I'm about to say, I'm not looking to disparage all televangelists, but I have a problem sometimes with some of them, and he's an evangelical Christian televangelist. He owns his own television network, and you know, I can't help but feel that he is getting some sort of financial support, and I mean, to me, there's just been a history of that. I mean, maybe it's not going to come out, you know, openly about how much money Trump has given his organization, but you know, let's face it, money talks, and who knows what this man has done to get his support in order to galvanize some sort of black vote. And I'm not saying that all of his people who follow him in his parish or his church would turn around and support Trump, but you know, it's unfortunate. We have weak minds, as you cited, Eric, and there's some of us who are not as politically astute or even just can't see to read between the lines what's going on, and may have their own personal frustrations and figure, well, they will go against the tide that's basically been trying to right the ship since Bush left office. But the fact of the matter is that these people need to be called out. I mean, this man is, you know, more important. He calls himself pastor, but he's an entrepreneur. He's the father of six kids. He is the head of the Now Television Network, something I never heard of, but it's a Christian television network based in South Carolina. So, you know, Trump is very determined to try to carve a niche with the black vote in the South, because usually we are the dividing line between what goes on in the White House and not. And if he could just seem to call some sort or cultivate some sort of you know, attraction with or traction with that voting block, he figures that would be the key to his election, and that's it. And it's, as I said, I mean, it's unfortunate that, and I hate to use the expression handkerchief, so on and so forth, who get up and they do all sorts of gesticulations in front of white folks publicly to make themselves look like as if, you know, well, these people are behind me, I can't understand why the others aren't, and you got to buy into it, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
Right? And forgive me for even bringing that handkerchief expletive, you know, scenario up, but that's what it looks like to me.
Yeah, but also, you know, getting back to, you know, the Professor Joel Petty, you know, and what he says the social media also plays a role in polarizing the electorate, creating space for ideologues. He explains because people stop having political discussions with people with differing points of view and narrow their world to like-minded thinkers. So posting on social media encourages side taking and feeds into a broader partisanship of politics, as Penny. Now, he teaches, of course, in new media and participating culture. It's really very interesting because he talks about, you know, the political advocacy of politics. So, you know, this is, here we have it.
Yeah,
social media is big.
Yeah, that's kind of been going on. I mean,
yeah.
And that's the frightening thing.
That article is probably a couple of years old. And it's to the point now where it's a profession. I mean, people have made that, they have it down to an art form now. And you know, these pastors, yeah, 2016, that magazine, that's 2016. So, I mean, now they've made it down to a passion, but it also, the social media realm has allowed anybody to get some notoriety as some sort of pundit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's big business now. You have the 24-hour news stations that are always having somebody, some character talking about something that you never heard of before, but still yet to ask them what they think. I think that, you know, the Trump aspect in that whole situation, there was one theory, you know, Wayne, that's out that I heard Roland Martin mention, and I think it was some other people mentioned it, that Donald Trump is not really trying to get the black vote as much as he's trying to get those white votes,
yeah,
of people who don't want to appear racist by voting for him. They don't want to be known as voting for a racist. So the softening of his tone allows them to feel better about voting, about their feeling that they want to vote for him.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, if he, you know, and they were talking about those suburban white moms who were on the fence about Donald Trump, but then when he was coming out with the harsher language, they might have repelled from him, withdrawn from him, and now his reach out to minorities and cutting back on the ferocity of his language, if that's the right word, cutting back on that type of language is making them feel better about their decision to vote for him. And that's part of that strategy that they're saying, that why he's trying to, in his own way, reach out to black people, because, you know, reaching out the way he did and sending that tweet about Dwayne Wade's cousin getting shot is not, in his mind, he feels he's reaching out to black people, right? But that's not really reaching out. That's just condescending and insulting. And also the notion that, you know, some of his pundits were spinning, saying, well, when they said, well, how come he hasn't gone in front of black people and saying these things that he's been saying? Why is he in front of an audience that's 90% white?
And some of these people, his surrogates of him, actually try to say, well, you know, he's on a TV show, and it's something that can be seen by everybody, mm-hmm. suggesting that, well, he could, the black people will hear it because he's doing it on TV, so he doesn't necessarily need to go and see them, which is, you know, which is just as ridiculous. But these are the kind mm-hmm. of conniptions, these are the kind of conniptions that a lot of his surrogates put themselves through. You know, I want to move to another subject that's kind of similarly as hot in the news this week, and also it goes along the lines of what you're talking about of social media, Ma, is the flack that this young quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers has been getting.
Oh, yes.
And
he
decided to refuse to stand up for the playing of the national anthem.
Yeah.
And really, people on the internet, really, you know, Twitter and things were alive with people saying he sucks and all. He got such a backlash from the majority of white Americans about him not wanting to stand up. And when he gave his reasons, they're valid reasons. And everybody stands behind him because that's his right as Americans. But the interesting thing is, and it brought back to me, remembering what social media, the first time I started getting on the internet was through YouTube and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I would look at a lot of videos on YouTube because I was thinking about that as an alternative to kind of make my own TV shows and such as mm-hmm. an actor. But one thing I noticed, I was struck with, when I would see some videos, and some videos might have people of color and stuff, how many people were very racist in terms of the comments. You know, if anybody's ever been on YouTube, when we look at the video, there's a comment section. Just like any website now, any newspaper website, there's a comment section. People can leave comments. And it really struck me how often people were taking opportunities to throw racist insults and say derogatory things about black people, when even a lot of the time it had nothing to do, the clip had nothing to do with race.
Yeah.
It might be the fact that it was just a black person in the video. And some of these people that are racist, that are prejudiced, that want to say these nasty things about people of color, were just lighting into them. And, I mean, it happened so much that was the one thing I took away from, wow, the Internet is really allowing people who are able to be anonymous to say whatever they want. And saying that is surprising that how many people still go to the race thing, how much hatred is out there.
Well, I agree with you, Eric. I hate to, and forgive me for interrupting, but, you know, that also brings to mind the black actress on Saturday Night Live. And look what, you know, degradation she suffered because she is a part of that cast, Ghostbusters, the remake of Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
And I just think it's appalling what she's had to go through and the stereotypical nonsense that comes out. I mean, it's not even funny. I mean, it's so freaking offensive. But, you know, it just goes to show America has not changed its stripes. And it's just unfortunate that we have to pay that black tax regardless of what we do, no matter how successful we become. And I just think that as generations go down, we need to pass this information on. You know, I mean, we need to know that, you know, when I think about the athlete who's not standing up and putting his hand over his heart with the national anthem, I go back to 1968, that's Tommy Smith and John Carlos running track in the Olympics. You know, I mean,
mm-hmm.
This is nothing new. I mean, it's all the same message. It's just been recycled and updated, and that's it. I mean, it's sad.
And having information literally at our fingertips 24 hours a day, you know, it's like having a daily newspaper that's updated every second in my hand. So having that and hearing about news that's happening as it happens, instantaneous access to it, it just keeps in your mind, in the forefront of your mind, that these things are still going on in this country. This is still going on in this country. Because before that, when you were when you guys were both working at WLIB, you guys were aware of the news. You guys reported the news. So when something happened, the news people heard about it first, and the authorities, the police officers, all those other people, and the public were the last ones to know. So consequently, because my mother was a broadcast journalist, I was able to know all the news as it happened.
if some racist stuff happened a certain day. I was constantly aware of it, as opposed to when you're not able to have access to the news, you might not hear about it for a couple of days.
That's right.
So you might not be aware of the constant barrage and really the level of prejudice that's still prevalent in our country. As you, you know, when you don't have access to that information 24 hours a day.
So that's absolutely true. And Eric, and really, the news, you know, when you get that's why Black radio was so important. You know, we had our stories. It was so important to the community. It was so important to the, you know, the general community. But we had access to let people know what was going on in our community. And we also told them we're not going to take it anymore. Okay?
Right.
So, you know, we were able to answer, you know, some of those questions that they had, thinking that we were inferior. Well, we showed them that we weren't. And I'll tell you one thing, the Suttons did a good thing by having the radio stations. It's just unfortunate that it's gone in another direction and it's not as powerful as it was. Because people in the Black community have, you know, a lot of power. Okay, we recognize the power. And it makes you even more aware of the things that you say and the things that you do and the things that you're going to do. So, you know, we're in a good position, but we're also in the same position. But at least we have social media. You know, now at least we have the social media, you know, that we can, like, we're heard all over the world. You know, we can talk to somebody in Ireland. We can talk to somebody in South Africa. We can talk to somebody all over and let them know what's happening. So we need to take advantage of it, which exactly is what we do.
Well, I mean, the thing is, I guess that's the good thing about social media compared to what we went through back then. Of course, the demographics were different. People would tune in because they would hear a story break like Tawana Brawley during your show or someone else's show, another, you know, instance, a racial conflict, the Howard Beach case. All these things, you know, this was pre-social media days. And the deal is that I think to a certain extent, since you had to take the time to get a reasonably decent education to go on and to report and hold and be held to a certain standard, I think those things are important. Today now, anything goes. As you said, anyone can be out here and be a pseudo-journalist and suddenly dig up a certain amount of credibility and respect. And I'm not saying that these people aren't scrutinized, but they don't go through the troubles that we went through just trying to get hired and to, you know, scuffle around till we were able to really do something to enhance our craft. But I just think there's something to be said of that, you know? I mean, I'm with change.
Go ahead, there is, Eric. 100%. There's things to be said about that, you know. Part of the flip side to that social media instantaneous and having these devices and technology being as advanced as it is that technology is as advanced as it is. So the same things that you guys were able to do in a TV, in a radio studio, now that technology has been advanced so much and elevated so much to the point where people can do that in their house, on their laptops.
Right.
You know, people can produce a radio show, can cut together some clips of their home movies, and put that up and manufacture a website and make it look like it's a news website and manufacture stories, which is what they did a story about on MSNBC last night about a manufactured website made to look like it was a Hillary Clinton website and saying all this derogatory stuff. So that's the flip side of technology, that people can literally be in their basement making stuff up. And because they don't have to go through the vetting process, through the educational process, through the work experience process that you guys had to go through as responsible on-air journalists at an actual television or a radio studio, this is how this information gets disseminated, misinformation. And so that's probably the flip side of having all this technology is that also, too, I would say, that in the days of three television networks or radio stations that people could go to and listen to for the Black news, there was one central location.
Yeah.
So meaning that when we all wanted to hear something, we all had to tune in at the same time at Monday at 9 o'clock to listen to Kay Thompson or whatever. We all had to tune in to the same time, so we all found out about the news at the same time. Now
we're not all finding out about the news at the same time, but it is there. People can catch up. But also, there's not that kind of, okay, everybody, this is what we're going to do. You know, here are our marching orders. Here is the plan, you know. And I guess it's good and bad because nowadays in social media and everybody, you have a lot more people who can be active. They can be activists in their area. But also, you have people who might not be activists who want to act like they're activists, or you're also open to the people who want to pass misinformation. So there's a lot of drawbacks as well as positive things about it. But to me, I'm just highlighting those positive aspects having a show that everybody would listen to at 8 o'clock at night, you know, that shared kind of a cultural experience that everybody can have at the same time. And in that, there's a certain amount of validity and verification that was taking place that doesn't necessarily take place now when one initially finds out about a story on the internet. Because if it's infactual, if the story is incorrect, it might take the person reading that story a few days to find out.
Yeah,
because once
the
fake story breaks, people start chasing that fake story down in the pursuit of 24-hour news, and then it might come out a day or two later like, no, the person who wrote that is crazy. Can't believe anything. So I guess that's part of the drawback there. Like you said, Wayne, we don't have people who have degrees in doing what, you know, you guys do.
And let's face it, I mean, I've worked alongside, and primarily these are people who I'm not ashamed to say were mostly white, who came up in the business, and they were not credentialed in a traditional sense as you would expect us to be, because, of course, it goes back to that whole black tax. I'm not saying that everybody, but like the guy on Channel 7 who just after 30-some-odd years got his college degree in journalism after being in the business 50 million years doing what he was doing. I mean, I guess there was a certain amount of guilt that one, goes through knowing that you were able to springboard on top of someone else's opportunity who stayed in school, did all the traditional things that they were supposed to do, but were denied the opportunity to get on the tube or to go in front of a microphone because you happened to be there at the right time. And I know I could call their names. Some of these people are even gone now, who started, for instance, WINS, where I first started out working. A lot of the people who were doing all news in the beginning in the early 1970s and the late 1960s were old-time disc jockeys, rock and roll DJs back in the day. So, you know, I mean, the deal is that every generation has had a learning curve in which to adjust to. But I think what's going on with us today is that, you know, there's no credibility factor to fall back on. People just call themselves who they think they are. I mean, everybody's like a Wendy Williams and a pundit on gossip news. It amazes me. And I've seen people come up of different stripes and they try to do it. And I'm not saying this to say anything against Wendy. God bless her. She was able to break through and basically come up with her own brand that people will know her regardless of what goes on. But that took years for that to happen. That just didn't happen overnight. But, you know, with social media, it's just too, spur of the moment. We have to, you know, really take our time to vet out what's being said. And as you pointed out, that was a good example, Eric, about how even in this presidential campaign, that there's been so much decadent behind-the-scenes hacking that anything is possible. And if you believe and hear a story long and strong enough, and I hate to refer to Joseph Goebbels all the time, but, I mean, the history has shown what, if you repeat something long and strong enough, you know, what it could do, and that's it. But you know, I don't know where it's going. Yeah,
I mean that's a definite page of the playbook that they took. I mean, Donald Trump repeats something over and over again, and that becomes a reality. It's the job that they've done on Hillary Clinton, you know, all these years. I mean, now she hasn't helped herself in some of the things she's done,
But we know if people who've been around, who've actually been alive to see, and paid attention to the news since back then, you kind of know that the Republicans were going after her when she was first lady, when she tried to be involved in policy and things like that. So we know where part of that comes from. But if you don't pay attention to those who don't, to those who don't know the information, aren't aware of what happened, you're going to believe this person just saying something over and over again just because. You know, hey, part of the reason that the Fox Network was created, right? To rebut the negative press that George Bush was getting when he first got appointed president. You know, because the press was rejecting him and rejecting and questioning anything. So the Fox Network came about to give that what they call fair and balanced, but also, but really what it was, I guess, was fair and balanced to them because they wanted to give their side of the story and present the news with their side of the story, the Republican conservative side of the story. So every news story is presented with that slant. So,
exactly.
I mean, you know, this is, and we know that the stories have been proven to not be true. I mean, it's been proven that Fox, they make things up sometimes. So, I mean, you know, they've been proven, but and then, you know, you get those people who throw in the argument, well, how do you decide what's the facts or not? You know, we got these guys who, you know, have found a way to debate science and to question facts and question numbers, you know, climate change. They don't believe it, but the earth is getting hotter. I mean,
I'm not waiting for any one of their, you know, scientists or pundits to come up and tell us anything to the contrary. I could see, you know, I've been on this planet long enough to see the changes that are taking place, and I just
know
how expensive it is to just maintain what I have because, you know, back in the day it would be easier to have homeowners insurance for certain things.
Right.
Now you got to spend money on hazard, God forbid if there's flooding and all sorts of other issues that you never thought. Don't tell me the world and the climate is not changing. You know?
Wayne, I don't mean to cut you off. We're at 2 minutes now. There's a couple of things I wanted to get out. We've got just about 2 minutes left of the show. First off, I wanted to make notion of sending out our condolences to the folks in the Kansas City, Missouri at the Seventh Heaven store out there where my nephew works. Fortunately, God was with him, but they had a murder-suicide there the other day, a young man that was
My God.
Came into this place of business, killed his killed the woman he was in a relationship with, and killed himself. So we want to send our prayers out to them over there at Seventh Heaven. Thank God for those that have been able to survive that. Secondly and lastly, we've got 90 seconds. I also want to say something about the passing of Gene Wilder, who was a really brilliant comedic actor.
Yeah.
He was someone, one of my favorites. Did a number of movies with Richard Pryor, in which he is hilarious, if you don't get a chance. You should see them. You also see him in Blazing Saddles with Cleavon Little. Frankenstein, another of Mel Brooks' movies. So Gene Wilder, comic genius, has passed away too. So we've come about to the end of the show. We want to say thank you for everybody for listening to the Cape Tops Live show. You can listen to us every Wednesday evening at 8 to 9 p.m. Or you can listen to our show anytime you want because it's archived on the blogtalkradio.com/Cape Thompson Live. My name is Eric Payne. I am the son. You over there, Mr. Gilman, you are?
An adopted son.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's honor and a pleasure to be here.
Okay. Wayne Gilman, legendary newsman. Thank you, Wayne. You are a lady.
Kay Thompson. The name of the program is Kay Thompson Live. Thank you for listening, everyone. Join us every Wednesday at 8 to 9 p.m. for Kay Thompson.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Wayne. Good night, everybody. Listen to us again next week. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Okay.